with death on the air. We're here cause we care. We ask all the questions that others don't dare. We're dead on the air. We're back, we're dead on the air.
Welcome back to Dads on the Air. Yes, we are Dads on the Air this 20th day of July 2010. And it's another bright, beautiful, sunny day in Sydney. And this is Bill Cable from Mediate Now. In the studio with me this morning, we have Ian Purdy from ianpurdy.com.
Yes, good morning, everybody.
And we have Phil York from Dads in Distress.
Good morning, everyone.
And today's show, we've got a special show today. It's we're going to devote the whole show to Dads in Distress. It's the Dads in Distress special. And we have a number of interesting people to talk to, including the national manager appointed only last year, Barry Gadera, who's, I suppose, in some respects, taken over from Tony Miller. And Tony Miller established Dads in Distress and was recently recognised on the 14th of June this year with an Order of Australia medal. So it's Tony Miller, OAM. But we'll be talking with people who are doing some great work with Dads in Distress now, and that'll be our special for today. But before we get on with the Dads in Distress story, we've been asked to make an announcement. This is from a researcher, Susanna Lyons from the ABC, and Susanna wants to put a show together on some of the positive stories, the happy stories of shared parenting. I saw an article in one of the weekend papers about Vince Colosimo and his ex-partner, and that is one of those happy stories. It's a shared parenting that is working. Now, Suzanne is looking for similar stories. She'd like to get in touch with a non-residential dad to interview for part two of her fatherhood special. And she's hoping that someone in our audience might be able to help her out. Catalyst is currently filming part two of a special on fatherhood, looking at whether science can help us to be a good dad. And one of the areas they're looking at is how non-residential fathers can be good dads. So they're looking for a success story, a modern non-residential dad who has shared custody of his children and who wouldn't mind sharing his story with us. So if anyone out there would like to participate in this program, you can get in touch with Susanna Lyons, who's the researcher website producer on Catalyst. You can get her on her Sydney phone number. That's 02-8333-2363. That's 8333-2363. Or you can get her on her mobile, which is 0409-689-543, 0409-689-543, or by email on Lyons, L-Y-O-N-S, dot Susanna, S-U-Z-A-N-N-A-H, at abc.net.au. Or you can simply go to the Catalyst website and follow the links and you'll get through to Susanna. So that sounds like a very worthwhile project. And with all this flood of bad news about shared parenting and some of the results coming out in the studies, it's great to get some good news stories out there. And these are cases where shared parenting is working well. Now, Ian, you've got a story for us?
Oh, it's not really a story. It's just Dean Jones, Victorian cricketer who was Father of the Year, unfortunately has been caught being a rat. He had a 10-year affair with an air hostess who actually bore him a son called Kobe. Her name was Kerri-Ann Hamilton, and he balked at paying child support for his illegitimate son, and this has brought the whole thing into the news, and he has been dethroned as Father of the Year. He's been labelled a rat, and one of those unfortunate things where a dad, an honoured dad, did the wrong thing. So Dean Jones, us here, smack on the hand, Dean Jones.
Yes, you do wonder how they come up with these Fathers of the Year. I think Bob Hawke was a Father of the Year some years ago, and especially with recent revelations about Bob Hawke, you might wonder why he would have been picked when there are so many hard-working, loving, devoted dads out there who don't get that sort of recognition.
Get no recognition. Anyway.
Now, also, there's a request for candidates or volunteers. This is a request coming from John Flanagan, who is the Deputy Registered Officer of the Non-Custodial Parents Party, Equal Parenting. The Non-Custodial Parents Party is putting forward candidates in the elections that are now set down for the 21st of August, and they are looking for candidates, they're looking for volunteers, they're looking for people to hand out how to vote cards. If you are interested in being a candidate, you have to put up your own deposit, which is $1,000 in the case of the Senate, or $500 for the House of Representatives, and the party may be able to help you out with printing costs. But this is a very important project to make sure that everyone, the members of the House, the community in general, are aware of the potential for mobilising the non-custodial parents and what their wishes are for our young people and for the community as a whole. You can also make donations to the Non-Custodial Parents Party, and donations are tax deductible up to $1,500. You must, if you are interested in registering as a candidate, the cutoff date is coming up very quickly. It's 12 noon on Thursday, 29 July 2010. And then, of course, the election is, as I said, 21st of August. So if you are interested in assisting or supporting the Non-Custodial Parents Party, get in touch with John Flanagan. You can get him on his email, which is, or his website address, which is N for Norman, C for Charlie, P for Peter, P for Petey, Peter, at xisle.info. Now, if you go to that site, you'll get all the information on the Non-Custodial Parents Party. Just once more, www.ncpp.xisle.info. Now, we'll be having John Flanagan coming into the studio next week, so we'll be talking to John about the party and what their plans are and what they're expecting on election day. So that'll be a special for next week and next week's interview. There's also saw an article here by Barbara Kay, headed "The Truth on Domestic Violence Just Isn't Sexy Enough," and she's got a particular quote here which I think is very true. Sociologist Joel Best once said, "A bad statistic is harder to kill than a vampire, and no field is more rife with bad statistics than domestic violence." And we know that for a fact, and we try to counter that by referring people to the 1 in 3 website, where you get the actual figures on violence, domestic violence, and it's in some way of countering the incredible statistics that are floated around by politicians and a lot of people that should know better. It would seem, furthermore, that the best time to launch a bad statistic about domestic violence is during massively attended sporting events. A gullible public seems to think that the high levels of testosterone on a playing field plus alcohol just naturally translates into astronomical escalation of male fans beating up on their wives and girlfriends. Now, there have been a number of examples of this. In England, there was a quote from the Association of Chief Police Officers, who stated in May that during the World Cup, cases of domestic abuse increased by nearly 30% on England match days. That would be something to really be worried about if it were true. The shocking figure sparked a big publicity campaign, including lurid posters featuring a cowering woman covered in bruises and the imprint of a man's shoe. But the 30% claim, it now appears came from cherry-picked data and was riddled with flaws, essentially ignoring match days when there was little or no uptick in abuse. Actually, trustworthy study done by the London Metropolitan Police Authority contradicted the 30% finding, but by then the media had a story that was too good to check for veracity. And there was a similar story in the US, and the Washington Post put a story out claiming that half of American women would face violence from their mate, and more than a third are battered repeatedly every year. Now, this is just simply an outrageous lie, because fewer than 1% of the female population can be said to have been battered. But one reporter actually ran down the stat to its source, which turned out to be an offhand comment by a feminist activist at a press conference.
Great source. So, really reliable. I'll write that one down. Yeah, we'll use that one.
Definitely. So, yeah, this the trouble is, though, once these figures get out there, they keep circulating.
Why is that? Why can't somebody just say, look, this is rubbish, this is the truth, and why doesn't the truth get the same press as a big load of codswallop?
We're
here trying to represent the truth. I mean, surely other media outlets have the same ethics as we do, and they want to present the truth in as clearly as they can. I mean, the feminists, yes, they have another agenda. We know why.
Yes, well, I think all we can do is just keep hammering away with the actual statistics, and as I say, keep referring people to the 1 in 3 website, and that's where you're going to find out what is really happening instead of these lurid stories. I mean, we see it in Australia with big boofy footballers called out to support the White Ribbon campaign. What special expertise they have, you'd have to ask.
Sure, yeah, they can tie a ribbon. Because you're a football player doesn't mean you can't tie a ribbon.
They get the press, but they're not really interested in the facts and figures. And just, I suppose, another good news story, but we frequently talk about the Fathers and Families Organization in the US, and they've been running a campaign to protect military parents. And this started with their work on their 2005 California bill. The problem being that when the dads are away fighting for the country, often say in Afghanistan, this is sometimes seen as an opportunity by the other parent to either win sole custody on a temporary basis, which becomes difficult to overturn, or just to get a special order made. And of course, there's the absent dad who's fighting for his country is not there to defend the case. And
not there to defend his family and his home and his the things that are most important to him.
That's right. So he's fighting for his country.
He's
fighting
for what's important to everybody else, while what's important to him slips away.
Yep. Now, the good news is that in California, there is a bill that's going through, which is going to stop this sort of activity happening. It's going to put a freeze on these sorts of orders while men are away. Men are away fighting for their country, and there are now 36 states which have passed military parent child custody legislation. And those states include Texas, New York, Florida, Illinois, Ohio, Virginia, Washington, Michigan, Colorado, and numerous others. So it's great to see that direct activism is getting some good results in the states. I must say it's a problem I haven't heard about in Australia, but the same thing could be happening in Australia. We just haven't heard about it. So maybe that's something that we should look into as to whether a similar sort of legislation should be proposed in Australia, because it's certainly a problem in the US. So we might go to a short break, and we'll be back with our first guest.
Love is the drug for me. Oh, gets the rest. Oh, catch that buzz. Love is the drug I'm thinking of. Love is a dog got a hook in me. Oh, get that butt. Love is the dog I'm thinking of. Oh, can't you see? Love, the drug for me.
Grow so fast. You have to cherish every moment.
Please, Daddy.
You have a right to be involved in the life of your child.
Dad's in Distress. 1-300-853-437.
We're back with Dad's on the Air.
Welcome back to Dad's on the Air this 20th day of July 2010, and this is Bill Cable from Mediate Now. We're now going to move on to the Dad's in Distress story. And just for a little history of Dads in Distress, the idea of creating a men's support group was conceived initially by Tony Miller, a father of five children who was struggling with the trauma of a marriage breakdown and the loss of his family. In his grief, Tony searched for help to come to grips with his circumstances and to gain an understanding of why this had happened. He then discovered that there was no help available. And as a consequence of that, and finding out what he did about the number of males committing suicide every day and the number of distressed and confused dads, he did something about it, and he set up the Dads in Distress group, which has been now running for
10 years.
10 years. So it's 10-year anniversary, about the same time as Dads on the Air, as it turns out. And we have Phil York in the studio from Dads in Distress, and on the phone we have Barry Gadara, the national manager. Are you there, Barry?
Yeah, hello, Bill. How are you?
Well, thank you. Barry, you're appointed, I think, last year, was it, to that position?
Yeah, it started in late October, yeah.
And in that position, you took over from the Tony Miller we were just talking about, I guess, was it a sort of a supplementary role there?
Yeah, a bit different than Tony's role. I come on, as you say, the national manager. I took over from Kevin Garland, before him, Tom Arts, and our roles have been in the management side of it, while Tony was, as you say, the founder and the spiritual leader, if you like, and did the training as far as running the meetings and work like that.
So, can you tell us a little bit about your role as national manager?
Yeah, my role is to oversee the coordinators we have in the different states and the 70-odd volunteers that we have Australia-wide, the administration, finance, a lot of that sort of work, more than running the groups like Phil does, for example.
Yes.
Yeah.
And you say national. Is Dads in Distress, in fact, in every state?
Yeah, we have representatives in every state. We only have paid coordinators in Melbourne, Sydney, and the mid-north coast up here, at Coffs Harbour. But we have volunteers all over the state, but mainly centred around Melbourne and Sydney, and the Hunter Valley.
Okay, so because I think you get a lot of calls to set up new branches, and I did hear, I think, North Queensland were particularly interested in setting something up, but there's nothing there at the moment, I think, is there?
Yeah, we've got a guy up in Atherton, and he's been with us for quite a while, but we have interest from Cairns and Townsville. We have guys put up their hand quite often wanting to help, so we try and work through with them and get them started as a contact or a buddy, if you like, to start with, so that if someone calls our 1300 number that's based here in Coffs and runs 24 hours a day, we can at least give them someone in the area that they can have a chat to, you know, ideally a group for them to attend and get that peer support, but, you know, at the very least, someone they can meet one-on-one or talk to over the phone that's in their area.
Yeah. And you've recently had some changes to your logo, I believe.
Yeah, we've just had that approved by the committee in the last couple of days, so we haven't got it out there yet. Yeah, the research that's done over the years, just our logo wasn't really accepted in a lot of areas, so we've sort of formalised that a bit and changed that along with some manuals and family violence policies and procedures. And then we've got a new brochure coming out in the very near future.
Of course, we have to remember we're on radio, but the previous logo, it had it seemed like a half a man's face, and then in a circle.
Yeah.
And whereas the new logo is more it's not gender particular. It seems, I think, it's got hands in it as the new logo. A hand in the middle, isn't it?
Yeah, there's a hand in the middle, which sort of represents that helping hand that we do. The other logo was good. I mean, I guess a lot of people thought that the man showed a bit too much anger, whereas, you know, we're not really about anger. We want to help people through their problems as much as we can.
Mm. And it's really, I get the impression that you're spreading so that it's not just dads. Are you, in fact, looking to help other people in the family?
Well, we have one-third of our callers to the 1300 number are females, either the new partner of a dad in distress or the mother of a dad in distress. So we help them a bit. In the past, I know Tony tried to establish a mums in distress, and we have a group down in Victoria looking at doing a possum, parents of stepmothers.
Mm.
But we really need to concentrate on the dads in distress side of it before we expand too far there, but we're certainly willing to help anyone.
Yes. Well, sometimes you the best way to get some movement going is to get the affected women involved, isn't it? They seem to have very good networking services, which was one of the reasons why, I guess, Dads in Distress was set up, because of some of the men as a natural disinclination to network and to you know, get out in the open what they're struggling with.
That's right. Yeah, we do have females attend our meetings at time. I know up at Newcastle we've got a lady who comes quite regularly, and that works out really good.
And is there still a focus on the suicide prevention training?
There is. We're currently looking for a bit of funding to help us with that. It's not so much a training, it's more of making our volunteers aware of what procedures they need to follow and giving them the tools to help anyone who they come in contact who may be suicidal. So it's definitely still a focus of Dads in Distress to help anyone who is suicidal.
And you mentioned some funding there. Is Dads in Distress getting funding at the moment?
We're lucky enough to get funded again this year from FACSIA for another 12 months, which was just an extension of our current program. But beyond June next year, it's still an unknown, which unfortunately is what we go through every year. The government keeps saying they don't know what program they will have after that time. And I guess they don't know if the government's going to be here at that time either, I suppose, so it's a bit hard. Mm-hmm. But, I guess they keep telling us that what they've given us is just a base for us to establish ourselves and be self-funded. So that's, you know, we're looking at that all the time. And we also were successful in getting a contract with a child support agency to do some work on their policies and basically to find out from the people out there what is wrong with their policies and where can be amended or fixed or to take advice on that. So we're just commencing that now, so we'll work on that for the next couple of years too.
Yes, well, we've been running a campaign for a long time trying to find out the suicide rate for the customers of the Child Support Agency, and it's never been forthcoming. So if you get to wade into there, you never know. We might actually get some more information on that.
Yeah, well, that'd be something good to work out, that's for sure.
Yeah. And just going back to the funding, I mean, we're not talking about $10 million a year, are we?
No, we get just over $300,000 from the government, which, you know, as you can imagine, with 6 or 7 or 8 staff and a 1300 number to operate and staff in different states, it's nowhere near enough, of course. So we raise money in different ways, like Phil's walk in Sydney here a couple of months ago was very successful. And go the different ways and from kind donations. So, but, you know, we really need to get some good sponsorship or corporate funding from somewhere in the future, I think.
Yeah, it's always about it. But it is tax deductible, isn't it, I believe, to your
donation? That's right. We have tax deductible status.
Yeah, because I guess that's always the problem, isn't it? When you accept sponsorship or government money, are you going to then be expected to toe a particular line as distinct from having your independence?
Well, you are. We're specifically funded for three areas, the mid-north coast up here, Western Sydney and the Frankston, Gippsland area down in Melbourne. And while we operate outside those areas, because we have other fundings to be able to, they're the three that we really have to concentrate on for the government. So they've given us a bit of flexibility over the years, and they've a bit more now. We've expanded up into the Hunter, and now we can hopefully include Brisbane and the Gold Coast as well, and also expand Sydney a bit more than what we have. We'd really like to see a lot more new groups down in Sydney.
We're speaking with Barry Gudera, who's the national manager of Dads in Distress. Barry, you mentioned that walk in Centennial Park organised by our own Phil York here. Could you tell us a bit more about that? Is that going to be an annual event?
Yeah, it is, Bill. We want to try and not only do it in Sydney, though. We want to try and have it in Melbourne and Brisbane at the very least next year and try and coordinate something there. Yeah, that went very well and created a lot of awareness, which is obviously what we really need to do, is to make everyone in Australia aware that of who we are and what we do and how they can contact us.
So this represents part of a new approach, I suppose, from Four Dads in Distress from its foundations 10 years ago.
Yes and no. It's something that we've always done, just in variable forms, I suppose, but now we know that, you know, our life needs to extend beyond June next year, and we've got to put steps in place to try and ensure that that happens.
Mm. And your services, I imagine, are being called on more and more, are they? Is that what you're finding? Or?
We are. Now that we've established the 24-hour call line, whereas we were only from 8 in the morning till 6 at night for quite a while, then we're getting a lot more callers than that way. And the website attracts quite a few inquiries as well.
Mm. Perhaps you could just tell us what is the web address, Barry?
www.dadsindistress.asn.au.
Okay, and if you go to that website, there's a whole lot of information on Dads in Distress. You can find out where the location of the next of a DIDS meeting is near you. You can find out about a lot about family law and child support. You can find about the real information on suicide and disorders, custody and parenting, family and relationship. There's a whole lot of really very good information on that website. So recommend everyone to have a look at that site. And there's also a section here on quantifying the problem and the risks, which always intrigue me, noting that the percentage of marriages that are going to end before the children are reared and the percentage that the marriage will end against his will and all sorts of things, you'd really wonder why men can get themselves into these situations, I suppose. But
yeah, there's a lot of reasons and causes, etc. But you know, we just want to try and help any guys that have found themselves in that situation work their way through it.
I wonder, Barry, could you just give us a very quick resume of what happens at a meeting, just so that people would have some idea if they want to attend a meeting?
Yeah, well, we have some long-time volunteers facilitating the meeting, and everyone that comes here gets a chance to speak and to speak about their experiences and how it's affecting them, and just someone, they have someone to listen to. And then during the course of the meeting, the facilitator can work out where they might be able to help that guy, whether there's someone else in the meeting that they could buddy him up with to work with them, find out what sort of help they need and refer them to the right place, and if need be, spend more time with them and work through the problems I've got. A lot of referrals in there to get them on the right track, whether it be child support, family law, court attendances, and all that sort of stuff. We have a lot of guys that will attend court with a dad in distress, because as you can imagine, they're a pretty confused man at that stage of their life, so they need all the support they can get.
Yes, and I suppose a real life meeting was the finalist in the Tropfest competition last year, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was very well done by Phil again, sitting there next to you.
Yeah.
That went very well, and there's also an example of the meeting on the website and a link to the Tropfest.
Oh, good.
Film, yeah.
Yeah, of course. I've seen the film. It was an extraordinarily moving film, and even our Phil York exposed himself for the world to see in that episode. But it was very very moving and well deserving to be a finalist of the Tropfest competition.
Yeah, it was, and Phil's been through the hard times, so he sort of knows what happens, and I guess that's what a lot of our facilitators and volunteers are like. They have been down that path, so they know what the guy attending the meeting is going through. You know, it's not, they don't pretend they know, they do know. So, and that's how they can help them a lot more.
Yeah, absolutely, Barry. That's the magic of the group. As you said, it's not you're not a dad coming in to talk to a professional about it. You're a dad coming in to talk to another dad about it and a group of dads about it. And we really do meet each other at that same point in our lives.
Mm. That's right. And you know, I'm happy to say I've never been a dad in distress. I'm happily married with three kids, so it's not much good me facilitating a meeting because I haven't been there and done it as Phil and other guys have.
No, but it's great that you're doing this work, Barry, and look, we are constantly praising the work that's done by Dads in Distress. It's such a worthwhile initiative, and we can only hope that people will get behind you and start making some of those tax-deductible donations to Dads in Distress, and so you can expand your services, because the need is certainly there.
Yeah, it is, Bill. We sort of find out more and more every day how much the need is there, and we're certainly very grateful for what you guys do at DOTA there. It helps us a hell of a lot. It's great.
Well, that's terrific. Well, look, Barry, thank you for coming on the program. Barry Gadara, the National Manager of Dads in Distress. Barry, we thank you again for coming on the show, and we might have a short break now and come back with the coordinator for Victoria.
Thanks, Bill.
Thanks, Barry.
Empty house, empty life, no family, no wife. I can stay up all night, I can run round in the nude, I can eat steak or any other type of food. Don't have to go and buy her flowers. Don't have to be early, I don't have to be late. I'm Daddy Immaculate. I'm Daddy Immaculate, coming to a funny year. I'm Daddy Immaculate, coming to a pub near you. I'm Daddy Immaculate, I'm coming to a pub near you. But I just said her bum looks big in this. Nobody to love, nobody to care, nobody to try and tell me to cut my hair. Nobody to play with, nobody to fight, nobody to keep me warm at night. Bum looks big and dead.
coming to a bum near you. But I just said her bum looks big as this.
They grow so fast. You have to cherish every moment.
Please, Daddy.
You have a right to be involved in the life of your child.
What do you care? It's not like you were ever there anyway.
Dads in Distress meet in your area every week. If you're a non-custodian parent and would like to know who to contact or just want someone to talk to, help is just a phone call away. Dads in Distress, 1300 853 437 or dadsindistress.asn.au.
We're back with Dads on the Air.
Welcome back to Dads on the Air this 20th of July 2010. And this is our Dads in Distress special today. Our next guest is Lawrence Anderson, who is the coordinator for Victoria in Dads in Distress. And Lawrence has been the coordinator for Victoria for the past 5 years. Lawrence, are you there?
Yes, I am, Bill. Good morning.
Good morning. Lawrence, I wonder if you could tell us a bit about what you're doing down there in Victoria.
Mate, right now I'm sneezing and coughing. How about you up there in Sydney?
We've got a beautiful, sunny, cool day in Sydney.
There you go. So, look, excuse me if I have to break for a second to cough and sneeze, but that's just the way things are.
Yeah, well, I think you're probably battling with some even bigger problems down there.
Well, I mean, you know, some aspects of what we do, yep, there are problems, there are logistical problems, but in terms of the sector, which is, of course, the men's health and well-being, I guess, sector of the community of service providers, is going ahead great guns. I mean, in the last 5 years, of course, 5 years, if I take the clock back 5 years ago and say, where are you going to be or where's the organisation going to be in 5 years' time, although I had some grand plans, I couldn't possibly have predicted just the length and breadth of our coverage of the Victorian area that we have today. So,
well, that's great. And so where are the main centres that you've got there?
Well, we at the moment, in 2005 we started with one support group in Werribee. Mm-hmm. And now we have, I think the last count it was 14. Mm. In between, we've got supports from Geelong all the way through to Bairnsdale, which is sort of west to east.
Yep.
And throughout the metropolitan and regional areas of Bass Coast, South Gippsland, Central Gippsland, northern suburbs, stretching out to cover mainly the areas where the FRCs are prevalent. That was sort of a plan going back, I guess, pre the announcement for the FRCs. We obviously knew something was afoot, and there were plans to really make a dedicated effort of some sort to provide support for separating parents. And you'll probably figure out with me, Bill, I try and de-genderise the discussion a little bit. But the separating parents, particularly if we can focus for a minute on displaced parents, which is the parent who leaves the family home and becomes disconnected, there is no gender specified in that category. In other words, through our work with the Child Support Agency over the same number of years and doing a lot of their public information sessions, I have just as many, you know, the interesting phenomenons are that I have just as many mums these days who are in dad's stereotypical position, which is the displaced parent.
Well, that's interesting.
Who present exactly the same as men do. This myth that men and women are, you know, men are from Mars and women are from Venus, when it comes to family breakdown, it isn't that way at all. What we find is that it's totally situational. And, of course, if you're a mum in that stereotypical dad situation, you have almost no supports out there because the system is geared around supporting mums who are the custodial parent, not the displaced parent. So for them, they present to me exactly the same way as a dad does. So really, you know, two of our support groups here is a bit of an olive branch, if you like. Two of our support groups are dedicated to both men and women who find themselves displaced after separation, therefore more likely to become socially isolated, lose connection with their family, their children. They're generally the child support payer, if you like, as well. So they've been the primary wage earner in the family. And so they find themselves in exactly the same situation as our stereotypical view of dads over the last 25 or 30 years of family breakdown, which has been trying to manage work, finding somewhere else to live, maintaining contact with the kids, perhaps displaced from their normal social network. And also, the other dynamic from this interaction we've had with CSA over the years has been identifying that for every dad I have coming to the group here, and there's a significant number coming to all the groups here in Victoria, for those men who are... This cold is driving me crazy. Help me.
Well, I think you're leading up to the fact that it's the second wives, perhaps, and the who are supporting the who are getting caught up with the CSA problems with the dads.
Well, what it is? That's thank you. That's not what I was going to say, but you reminded me. For every dad I've got sitting in front of me saying, "God, I just want to be meaningfully part of my kids' lives," and somehow or another, whereas 6 months ago I was just a dad and doing my usual parenting thing, all of a sudden now it's a huge battle to maintain some sort of meaningful contact with my kids. There's just as many women who come across to my table and sit there and say, "Look, can you give me some advice? These kids have got a dad out there and he just won't engage. You know, he's off with the new family." So, often from our perspective as an organisation, we see a very niche corner of the market in that predominantly dads who are displaced and who are struggling to maintain contact with their kids, if you wanted to put it in a nutshell.
So, Lawrence, you are expanding the services of Dads in Distress. We were speaking with Barry Goodere a little bit earlier.
Goodere, yep.
And I've got the pronunciation. Could you pronounce it again for me?
Goodere,
okay. Now, Barry was saying, yes, that a lot of women are starting to come to take advantage of the services as well, and I think there was one stage there was even talk of having a mums in distress as well as the dids.
Well, there's that, but again, that tends to in my humble opinion, that tends to genderise the argument, and a lot of the work we've done in the last 5 years here in Victoria is about not just expanding our supports, but expanding our knowledge or capturing our knowledge in snapshots and pictures of referral pathways. We need to know how long it takes to get into a family relationship centre, how long it takes to get into mediation, how long it will take to, in situations where inevitably supervised access is going to be the primary focus of an interim hearing, for example, or an interim parenting plan, then how long does it actually take to get a child and dad and mum into that service? And as you would probably know yourself, Bill, that can be an extraordinary period of time when you look at the other things mums and dads have to decide around, parenting issues and so on. And yes, oftentimes we can't get them into those services within 7, 8, 9 months.
Yes, I was going to say, that's my experience.
If the system doesn't know it, if the family law solicitors don't know it, if everybody doesn't know what is going on out there, it's very hard to give clients good advice.
Yes, well, I'd refer people also to the Men's Rights Agency, who have been running a survey on the FRCs.
Yep.
And so they're actually getting that information together. But
yep. And so the question for me, Bill, is, so in the meantime, we've got to stop bashing the government, we've got to stop bashing the services, because over the last 5 years I've been just gifted to be able to have some money and some very loose boundaries on where I can go and what I can get involved with. And what I find out there is that there is an extraordinary number of practitioners, people working at the coalface. I'm not talking about management. I'm talking about men and women just like you and me, Bill, who get up in the morning and we have a shower and we go off to work and we just try and do the best we can. And within that network of service providers, when we talk to people at the coalface, we find there is no difference in the way we see things because we're there every day working in that area. And so this idea that, everyone in the child support agency is out to get me or everyone in the FRCs, they are genuinely doing the best they can. They've got problems with staffing. They've got problems getting, we've got one FRC down here that's gone through 3 or 4 management changes in less than that amount of years. These community reference groups where we get to share information with the FRCs and we get to talk about these issues. And another one of the FRCs, that's now been off the agenda for some 9 or 10 months because they haven't been able to find anyone to employ to coordinate those meetings, or at least that's what they're saying.
Well, Barry, Lawrence, I'd recommend next week's show for you because we'll be speaking to the chief executive of the FRCs.
Yep.
If there's anything particular you'd like us to put to her, perhaps get in touch with Phil York, and we can ask the question.
Sure, absolutely. But what I'm saying is that look, we just need to know the way the chess players are moving, and so it's, for me, it's what do we do with mums and dads? Let's forget about the gender war at the moment. The mums and dads, because let's look at it from the kids' perspective. If I'm little Johnny, I know that my best future is predicted by having a mum and dad who can get back up as quickly as possible. And the thing the whole system and psychology and all the research has been done tells us is conflict is the biggest denoter for a poor outcome for children. So if we take those two facts that we can generally all agree on together, the case for me is, what do we do with mums and dads in that interim period between the time they're most likely to fall into high conflict and actually getting into the services that can help them avoid high conflict? What's happening to mums and dads in that time now? If we take, for example, an average waiting list for an intake for mediation of 8 weeks, so if we look at that as, or 6 weeks, I know some FRCs are down to zero. New agencies coming on board or new services have got very short waiting lists. But in the main, if we say 5 or 6 weeks, what are we doing with mums and dads during that 5 or 6 weeks? And I think that's where the support, dads in distress support services, and our knowledge, regional knowledge on the ground of everything that's going on, really becomes important for that recently separated mum and dad. How do we stop them from slipping into social isolation, which of course is the biggest predictor of mental illness and those sorts of issues? So as an early capturing service like ours and like Men's Line and some of the other great work that's being done out there, we find that we're under-referred. Those services really aren't getting on board and saying, look, we can't see these people for 6 weeks. Now, what's going to happen to them in that 6 weeks? Well, they're going to fight about child support. They're going to fight about parenting issues. Yeah, you know, when mum says, I'm not giving you the kids this weekend because dad says, I'm not giving you the kids this weekend because you haven't paid your child support. That's when people who've never had a problem with family violence in the past find themselves at the door of their ex-partner at 12 midnight, banging on the door saying, these are my kids, I just want to see my kids, whether that's mum or dad. Mm. And now we've got an intervention order application, or in New South Wales you call them AVOs, I believe.
Yes.
And here we have another set of boxing gloves for recently separated mums and dads, who, let's face it, we don't generally separate because things are just tickety-boo.
Yes.
When things aren't going particularly well. So for us, it's about, here we are, we're in early intervention, suicide prevention is our primary focus, but that's probably 5 to 10% of our client needs. The rest of it is just getting somebody into some peer support in a location where they're living that has good knowledge around their local services, intake processes, time frames. So our clients tend to go into those services with a much more realistic expectation of what they can expect from the service, what the boundaries are for that service, and what the next steps are for them.
Yes, so, as you say, well, 6 weeks is long enough, but in a child's life, but sometimes it could be 6-8 months before you actually have the mediation and get things rolling. So it's
for the average bloke out there, if I said to you, you know, for those of us that have been through this whole situation, if I said to you, I separated last week, if we can get to you at that point, and I said to you, look, Bill, it's going to be 18 months before your life is completely back to normal. Mm. If you follow the bouncing ball, here's the pathway, if you like, here's the map. In 18 months' time, your life is going to be back to normal. Now, when we say that and look forward, we say, oh my God, that's such a long period of time. 18 months before my life's back together. I don't know if I can deal with that. Mm. Well, hang on, now let's have another look at that. Let's go forward 10 years, and I'll ask you this, Bill. In 10 years' time, what is important to you? What's going to be, what denotes happiness? If I put a bubble in the air in front of you and say, paint me a picture of happiness in 10 years' time, generally the answer is going to be, I want my kids to be okay. I want them to be going okay in their education, in their relationships, in their ability to form good relationships when they're adults, and I don't want them to be a burden on me until I'm 80 years old. And so when we look at it from that point of view and look backwards, all of a sudden 18 months doesn't seem like such a big chunk of life. When we consider that life with our kids doesn't stop when they're 18. Ask my mum and dad, Bill. themselves.
Yes, it's that's good to get people to take that big picture approach. But there's going to be like everyone virtually who separates is going to have to face up to that 18 months of hell, aren't they?
Well, or 18 months of proactive steps to end up at that point in 18 months' time where your life is back on track, you're back at work, things have settled down, the kids are in a routine, you're in a routine, you're better able to manage decisions around your own future and the future for the kids, and you're much better off, better at focusing on their needs rather than mapping everything into your needs. So, you know, from my humble opinion, and I'm somebody who hasn't seen my own kids for somewhere around 19 years now.
Yeah, so
from my position looking back, I would say if somebody had told me back in 1990 when I separated that, hey, if you follow this bouncing ball in 18 months' time, everything's going to be tickety-boo, you're going to be... If I could have seen that picture, if there was somebody out there like me, like Phil, like Barry and others, that amount of time ago that could have said, look, here's the bouncing ball, this is what you need to be focused on now, and in 18 months' time... Hey, I'd take it in a snapshot, and
you probably need to reset your goals, I guess, for what you expect to happen in 18 months. You know, from being right down to being right up a bit, but may not necessarily be with your children, unfortunately, as in your own case.
Well, one of the things we find in the peer support model is that it's pretty hard to get that down when you're able to help support somebody, another bloke or another mum or another dad sitting next to you who's in your situation. It's a lot more difficult to get that low.
Yeah, Lawrence, we're speaking with Lawrence Anderson, the coordinator for Victoria of Dads in Distress. Lawrence, I think we're running out of time. We're going to speak to some of your colleagues.
Sensational.
So, look, thank you very much for coming on the show today, and we'd like to follow up with you in the future, and you can perhaps tell us a bit more about that excellent work you're doing in Victoria.
My excellent work? How about yours? Good on you, Bill, and thanks everyone from the team up there. I'm an avid listener and I download the podcast. If anyone's out there and you get an iPhone, download the podcast. It's fantastic.
Well, thanks very much, Lawrence, and
good on you, Bill.
We'll talk to you again soon.
Cheers.
It starts with one
thing. I don't know why. It doesn't even matter how hard you try. Keep that in mind. I'm resigned to trying to explain in due time. All I know, time is a valuable thing. Watch it fly by as the pendulum swings. Watch it count down to the end of the day. The clock takes life away. It's so unreal. Didn't look out below. Watch the time go right out the window. Trying to hold on to, didn't even know. Or wasted it all just to watch you go. I kept everything inside, and even though I tried, it apart. What it meant to be will eventually be a memory of a time I tried so hard and got so far. Try, keep that in mind. I designed this rhyme to remind myself how I tried so hard. In spite of the way you were mocking me, acting like I was part of your property, remembering all the times you fought with me, I'm surprised it got so. Things aren't the way they were before. You wouldn't even recognize me anymore. Not that you knew me back then, but it all comes back to me in the end. You kept everything inside, and even though I tried, it all fell apart. Meant to be will eventually be a memory of a time when I tried so hard and got so far, but in the end it doesn't even matter. I had to fall to lose it all, but in the end it doesn't even matter. I put my trust in you, pushed as far as I can go for all this.
Dads in Distress meet in your area every week. If you're a non-custodian parent and would like to know who to contact or just want someone to talk to, help is just a phone call away. Dads in Distress, 1300 853 437 or dadsindistress.asn.au.
We're back with Dads on the Air.
Welcome back to Dads on the Air this 20th of July 2010. And our next guest is Rob Kosh, who's a consultant to Dads in Distress Support Services. Rob works with Lawrence Anderson, who's the coordinator for Victoria. And Rob is also the founder of Better Men Australia. Rob, are you there?
I am. Good to hear you, Bill.
Yes, you too. Now, Rob, I understand you've been involved with producing the new brochure for Dads in Distress.
That's right. That's one of the many projects that they've got me on to see the agency ramped up to a whole new level, and it's very exciting to see.
So, what are the new areas that you that you're finding that you're promoting in the brochure that Dads in Distress is getting to?
Well, I think the previous brochure was fine, except what we need to do is just make the message a lot more clearer so that people who don't have a lot of time on their hands can get a very good, quick overview within a few seconds. And I think that's just good common sense in marketing. And but some of the clear messages we want to get across is the five things that Dads in Distress does, and that's the group support work, the one-on-one support, the advocacy, the website, and the 1300 number. And there's just an incredible amount of great work that's being done. And the big challenge for any kind of community service is getting the word out there, and that's what we're trying to do.
Yes, and I believe you've got some funding to get the brochures out.
Well, that's certainly part and parcel of what we're trying to do. There's so many projects that require funding, and every organisation's in the same boat. Everyone's struggling to get that kind of funding to improve their services. One way or another, these jobs are getting done. I think that's very admirable to the leadership team who have so committed to seeing did advance to a whole new level.
Yes. So it's really expanding beyond the original, I suppose the original focus was on suicide prevention, which is, I guess, still very important to the Dads in Distress, but you're moving into other services as well now.
Well, Dads in Distress is still has that focus, for sure, but I guess we're just seeing it more holistically, that you need to do a whole lot of other things just to be able to help somebody get on top. Otherwise, you might be able to prevent a suicide one day, but unless the problems are addressed, next week the guy might be in the same predicament. No. So we've got to treat this holistically. Look at the relationship, look at the situation, the access to the children, getting him linked into various services and supports, because Dads in Distress is only one organisation of many that are all trying to help people to have a better life. So we're really keen to work together with other organisations as well.
And, one factor that's absolutely deadly to the continuing relationship is if there's any family violence. I believe there are some new policies in that area as well.
That's right. We've been working for some time now on developing a good, balanced response to the issue of family violence that is going to make it very clear to the community services sector and to governments that Dads in Distress is a mainstream organisation that has a commitment to preventing all forms of violence. We abhor the violence towards women and children, but we also acknowledge that men are sometimes the victims as well. So we try to take the gender factor out of the whole family violence situation and problem, and look at it holistically again. So the actual policy in itself is several pages long. It's tied into the family violence initiatives that the government is backing, and anyone that wants to read it, I think, will find an unequivocal commitment to preventing and addressing family violence in whatever form it takes.
And presumably that's on the website, is it, Rob?
I believe so. That's not my department, but that's certainly an intention. So if it's not there now, it soon will be.
Okay, now you've brought to Dads in Distress, I imagine, your experience from your own group, the Better Men Australia. I wonder if you could tell us a bit about that.
Sure. Better Men Australia is the name of the business that I've created that is a consultancy business to agencies like Dads in Distress, but also to local governments and to agencies like family services agencies, schools. But I've been doing a fair bit of work in schools as well, and churches, anywhere that there's a commitment to want to do better in engaging men. There's a real growing realisation that a number of organisations don't do that very well. So there's a number of reasons for that, a number of attitudes that have to be challenged, but also some very practical things. So part of my role is to help evaluate and do an audit of an organisation so that they can see clearly what their strengths and weaknesses are and what they can do to address those. So that's part of it. It's also I take men on adventures where there's some group mentoring that goes on in an informal capacity, and so kayaking. Friday I just went with a group of men to Mount Buller for a day of skiing. That was fantastic. And but there's also events that we're running, and there's a growing number of men and women who are getting on board with Better Men Australia to provide these events, these services to the nation of Australia.
So you promote networking, I guess, from what you've just said, and also do you promote the individual sort of making the best of himself? Or?
Yeah. I guess it's about personal development, and the reason why I've called it Better Men Australia is, you know, there's a number of actual pop songs. Robbie Williams sings that song, Lord, I'm Doing All I Can to Be a Better Man, and Pearl Jam sings a song about better man, and there's this growing, underlying desire in a lot of men that they might be doing okay, but they really would like to be doing better than they are. It's not a case of being better than other people, but better than who you used to be. So I'm finding that there are a number of men who are starting to say, well, hang on, yeah, we get development in all kinds of areas of business and education. Why not the personal side? So all that coaching and mentoring is starting to come into vogue now. And we're positioned to be able to offer that kind of service.
And do you have a different approach when you're talking to the men who are really in distress, as distinct from people who just want to perhaps you know, make the most out of their life and their style of life?
Yeah. Well, look, you know, you have to be very compassionate, sympathetic. You don't go guns in blazing. In fact, I never do that. It's about sitting and listening and really tuning in to where a man is at and what he would really like to see his life look like, and then to find out whether there's ways that we can help him in that. So a separated man, I think, and this is what we've been underlining for all volunteers involved in Dads in Distress, the importance of really listening. Sometimes that's the big thing that we can do, just to be able to give a guy a chance to unload, unpack, and vent some of his feelings without judgment, without criticism, just creating that safe place to do that. And DIDS has been doing that for 10 years, and they've been doing a fantastic job. I really, I'm so privileged to be in an organisation that has achieved so much with so little. I've been impressed with the calibre of people, men and women, involved in the organisation.
and just to be able to get alongside them to help them to be there for separated men and their families, it's just awesome.
Yeah, look, Dads on the Air are great supporters of Dads in Distress for the wonderful work they've been doing for the last 10 years.
I know.
But just coming back to those, do you go to the actual meetings, the support meetings of Dads in Distress?
Me personally?
Yes.
Yes, occasionally I go along to, I'm coaching some facilitators and I go there just to evaluate how they're going. And to provide a little bit of feedback for them. Sometimes I'm involved in other men's groups and talk up the importance of the kind of model that DIDS does, and that's been really important too. So I don't limit myself to just mixing with Dads in Distress groups. I think that there's a whole variety out there doing a great job, and we need to be learning from each other.
Yes, because I suspect that the natural tendency of a man, a father perhaps, who's in distress, it would be to shut everything down. And even perhaps when someone else is telling their story, perhaps they don't listen in the way that that you're recommending or that you might be able to do it. Do you sort of get men to open up in this sort of networking, in this networking community, to say that they can listen and can contribute?
Yeah, look, for some guys, it's harder, and they come with a fair resistance. The anxiety level is high. They're not sure just whether they can open up. But pretty soon, within 20 minutes or so, they start to feel that this is okay. I can do this, and because the model isn't one where you go around systematically in a circle and open up. You've got the freedom not to, and to chime in when you're ready. And I think that kind of freedom just takes the pressure, and they are able to open up. If not the first week, maybe the second week. Pretty soon, though, they start to realise that just by listening to others gives their own situation a lot of clarity.
Yes, I guess these are the techniques that have worked, and I think one is a speaking stone or speaking stick or something that's handed around at the meetings.
Yeah, that's right. It just helps everyone to honour the one person who has the floor rather than chiming in unrestrained with advice when it's not really warranted or called for. It really helps us to do what DIDS does best, and that is to listen. To really, really listen.
And do you find that when people have got through their individual drama and their major problems, do they tend to keep coming, or do they just drift off once they've solved their particular problem?
Well, it varies from group to group. Some groups have a really good social kind of component, and there's friendships that are developed, and those kind of groups tend to hold guys a lot longer. We've actually been introducing a new model, which I call the aptitude model, where I've identified about 12 different contributions or aptitudes a man or a woman could bring to the whole issue of separation. And rather than just seeing that there's only one or two roles that could be had if someone was interested in staying involved, there are actually several other things, like an encourager, an empathiser, so if people can be given the opportunity to operate in ways that is according to their strengths, they're more likely going to stay involved, because they're not a square peg in a round hole. They're not being forced to do anything that is uncomfortable to them.
Yes, we speak with Rob Koch, founder of Better Men Australia and a consultant to Dads in Distress Support Services. Rob, if someone does want to get involved in this area and perhaps assist dads in distress in their work, what should they do? Should they just go to the website?
They can start there and get a good feel for what Dads in Distress is about, but certainly speaking to the national manager, Barry Guidra, or one of the state coordinators, or just ringing the 1300 number one way or another, they'll get in touch with the right person and can start to talk about volunteering. And then we'll sit and have a cuppa sooner or later and talk about the possibilities and whether a person is ready and right for this kind of job.
Great. Well, Rob, could you just give us that 1300 number and the website address?
Yes, certainly, certainly. Well, the website address is dadsindistress.asn.au, and the actual phone number, of course, is 1300 853 437.
1300 853 437. That's great. Well, Rob, we're going to speak to another of your colleagues shortly, and may I thank you very much for coming on the program today and telling us about your work with Dads in Distress. And we wish you all the very best in that important work you're doing, and hopefully we might get to talk to you again as this your new brochure settles down.
Thank you, Bill, and thank you too for Dads on the Air. You guys have been doing an amazing job over the years, and I do tune in and really respect what you do and encourage everyone to spread the word about Dads on the Air.
That's fantastic. Well, thanks again. We've been speaking to Rob Kosh, founder of Better Men Australia and consultant to Dads in Distress Support Services. We'll be back in a moment.
Tell someone to love me, I need to rest in arms. Keep me safe from harm and pouring rain. Give me endless summer, Lord, I feel the cold. Feel I'm getting old before my time. As my soul heals the shame, I will grow through this pain. Lord, I'm doing all I can to be a better man. Go easy on my conscience, 'cause it's not my fault. I know I've been told to take the blame. Rest assured, my angels will catch my tears. Walk me out of here, I'm in pain. As my soul heals the shame, I will grow through this pain. Lord, I'm doing all I can to be a better man. Once you found that lover, you're homeward bound. Love is all around, love is all around. I know some have fallen on stony ground, but love is all around. Tell someone to love me, I need to rest in arms. Keep me safe from harm, from pouring rain. Give me endless summer, Lord, I feel the cold. Feel I'm getting old before my time. As my soul heals the shame, I will grow through this pain. Lord, I'm doing all I can to be a better man.
Welcome back to Dads on the Air this Tuesday, the 20th of July, 2010. And we've been speaking this morning to various guests from Dads in Distress and our Dads in Distress special. We spoke with Barry Guidra, who's the national manager, Lawrence Anderson, the coordinator for Victoria, Rob Kosh, the founder of Better Men Australia and consultant to Dads in Distress Support Services. And now we're looking forward to speaking to Marcy Payne. Marcy, are you there?
Hi, I'm here.
That's great. Now, Marcy, we've been speaking with some of those other guests about the increasing role for women in Dads in Distress, and I wonder if you could perhaps tell us a bit about your experiences there.
Since I've been working there,
You've only recently joined Dads in Distress, have you?
I have only recently, but I'm in about my third month, I think, now, so it's very new. One of the reasons I joined Dads in Distress, I've actually worked as in a women's refuge in 1978, and a lot of the things that I see happening for men now are what was happening for women back then, where there was not a lot of support to assist people with their families, because my goal is mostly looking at kids in family situations and how best they can be served.
Because I think, is there one male refuge in Australia, or are there some more starting to be established?
I'm not sure of any, but I know that Dads in Distress are looking at starting one in the New South Wales, and they're seeking funding for that at the moment, and looking at how's the best way to serve men. Like, is it because a lot of men leave the home and they leave the home with the woman and the children, so that means they only require single accommodation, whereas years ago when women left they took the children with them, and so they require different needs. So at the moment they're doing research and studies on what's the best thing. Like, we don't want to reinvent the wheels, we want to do what's the best for families.
Yes, and I mean that's also evident in the courtrooms. Now, I believe you have a background as a solicitor.
I have worked in the courts, that's true.
And you'll often find there's a room set aside for women, but there's no equivalent for men.
I think society's still coming to grips with what the violence areas are. The law reform is just doing a paper on violence and how it's perceived in the communities. One of the things that 30 years ago, violence was definitely a physical thing that was protection for women from physical violence and some emotional violence. But what I'm seeing as far as the courts go with men now is that the level of violence leveled at them is an emotional level of violence. And this is where women have made accusations that towards men, and that keeps the children away from the men, and that level of violence is actually portrayed in an emotional term towards the men because of that, where they have to provide the fact that they are the dads and they love their children and that they haven't committed atrocities on these children. A lot of those times the accusations are not seen to be correct, and yet the courts still are keeping children away from their dads. This is reflective in the children, in their behaviour, and instead of looking at it at that way, the courts often look at it that the children's behaviour is because of, you know, the behaviour that the man was supposed to have committed. So it all gets a tangled web in there, rather than the kids just being able to have access to both parents in a place of safety should be what we're all aiming for. If there is perceived violence areas, then the children should still have contact with whichever parent is creating the violence, but they should be able to do that in a safe environment. We've got lots of places throughout Australia that create that sort of an environment for children. We should be utilising it. The court should be utilising it, not taking children away from either parent.
Yes, well, it's so easy to make an accusation, isn't it?
And then,
unfortunately, everyone, then it becomes an exercise in protecting your backsides, I think, that no one wants to be caught out, so it's easier to impose supervised
time. Go back years back. I mean, I've worked a lot in Indigenous communities, and years back, you know, DOC's solution to, you know, the Indigenous situations back then were, let's take the kids away from their parents, place them with lovely white families, and everything will be tickety-boo, as Lawrence was saying earlier. But the problem is, that isn't the solution. When the children grow up, they go back to their parents. They want to know their parents. Surely we've learned from that and shouldn't just perpetrate that again on children and say, well, okay, this isn't working, so let's just whip the kids away from their dads and place them with their mums until we can solve the problems. I mean, let's just find a safe place for children and let both parents have to show that they can raise children even though they can't live together or with each other.
Yes, I mean, we look back on the practices towards the Indigenous families of 50 to 100 years, perhaps, and say, you know, how on earth did we allow this to happen? And I suspect we're in 50 or 100 years' time, we're going to look back on the current situation and say the same things.
I agree totally, Bill.
Yes, it's a. I think it's a bit of an offshoot from feminism too. That you know, we're all out there supporting women getting equal rights, but it now seems to have overshot the mark in my view. And I think it's now no longer looking for equal rights; it's looking for one over another.
That, well, if you again, you probably can't say it as well as what I can, Bill. In 30 years ago, when I became worked as a women's refuge, I actually was and still am a feminist. And I agree that, you know, we should be aiming for equal rights. And that's why I got involved in the feminist movement 30 years ago, 40 years ago now.
Oh, you don't sound that old.
I am. But I now see that we've gone past equality and we're now looking at domination from the other area. And that had to happen, perhaps. A lot of people say you have to go over the mark to come back to it. But I think it's now time to come back to equality. And it's about kids being raised. I mean, I remember talking with one woman since I've been working at DIDS, and she actually took her children away from the father, and he committed suicide, and that was 7 years ago. And she's now, her little girl then was seven, she's now experiencing the problems of having a 14-year-old teenager and understanding, well, she's come to the understanding that maybe she shouldn't have left and taken the child away the way she did, but all the dad really wanted was to love his daughter. And these are the things that sort of say to me, we need to start addressing some of those issues. We need to help women through those processes, and we need to help men to have still form this relationship with their children that encourages them to be the parent, the dad that they is always there, not the dad that's committed suicide. And, you know, we're going to have a future with children without having fathers because, you know, that suicide rate. I was astounded when I started working at Dads in Distress and found the suicide rate in men to be so high.
Yes, it's terrible. We wouldn't put up with that level of death in any other area, I'm sure, if it was heart disease or motor vehicle accidents or anything else. But it's a forgotten figure in Australia, at very high. Well, it's at least the figure that's often quoted is 5 a day, but I've heard it up to 12 a day. It's
one a day is too many. Really.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's very powerful, I think, to have you there, Marcy, as a woman working in Dads in Distress. Do you find that women, do they tend to call you? Are they more comfortable speaking to you?
I've spoken on the phone, the 1300 number, for when I first started, because I thought that was a good way of getting a hinge of things. And I found that when a person's in distress, and I found that in all walks of my life, wherever I've been, when a person's in distress, they don't really care who they're talking to. They just want someone that has got the ability to listen effectively or proactively and be able to help them and point them in the direction of where they're going to get the best support. They don't really care about whether they're male or female, I found. And I found that certainly since I've talked on the phone, women, I know lots of women have rung over the years before I've got there, and when I've spoken with the people that take the calls, and it's mostly men, that's never been an issue. And I've certainly listened to some of the men speaking on the phone, and the women that they're talking to do not show any signs or that they're, you know, perturbed because it's a man, for instance. Mm. So I think it's the same with me. I think they just, they want someone to talk to, someone that's going to be able to help them, assist them to find some answers for and solutions for whatever the issues are for them.
Yeah, look, I'm sure that's right. And, yeah, it's just such a great resource to have available, and we can only hope the government continues its funding of Dads in Distress.
Yes.
And what exactly is your role there, Marcy?
Part of my role is, as it was many years ago with Women's Refuges, is finding funding and seeking funding. A lot of the things that I'm endeavouring to seek funding in are research areas, because a lot of the things that Dads in Distress are collecting statistics for and have been for the last 5 years is in research areas. And I'm sure there'll be a lot of research people out there that'd be very interested, because they've actually got benchmarks that they can have over years to be able to provide what I've always said, what is best for society, not what we think is best or, you know, what anecdotal evidence is saying, but actually what is best for society, giving the government the figures they want to, so that they know what funding to provide where.
Yes, look, on a happy note, Marcy, I think you can hear the music
in
the background, which means we're being wound up. We've been speaking to Marcy Payne. Marcy, thank you very much for coming on the show. And we might have an opportunity to speak a bit more in more depth on another occasion. But
love to.
Once again, thanks for coming on Dads on the Air.
Thank you.
Thanks, Marcy.
Bye.
Okay, well, this show will be available from our website, dadsontheair.net, from this afternoon on. We'll be back next week.
We're Dads on the Air. We're here 'cause we care. We ask all the questions that others don't dare. We're dads on the air. We're dads on the air.